Zapruder film establishes 3 shots in 5.6 seconds. Here. I'm Oswald.
Time me.
Go.
Time?
Between 6-7 seconds.
And that's without really aiming.
Key is the second and third shots came almost right on top of each other. It takes a minimum 2.3 seconds to recycle this thing. The other problem is there was a tree there, blocking the first 2 shots. By the time they crammed the Zapruder film.
Didn't J. Edgar Hoover say something about that? Leaves it falling off in November?
It was a Texas live oak, Chief. It sheds its leaves the first week of March. So you take this Carcano, world's worst shoulder weapon, and you try to hit a moving target at 88 yards through heavy foliage? No way. Yeah. The FBI tried 2 sets of tests. Not one of their sharpshooters could match Oswald's performance. Not one. And Oswald was at best a medium shot. The scope was defective on it, too. I mean, this is the whole essence of the case to me. The guy couldn't do the shooting. Nobody could. And they sold this lemon to the American public.
This Zapruder film is the proof they didn't count on, Lou. We gotta get our hands on it.
That means we have to subpoena Time Life.
Let me ask you something, Lou. Why not just shoot Kennedy coming up Houston? There's plenty of time. It's out in the open.
I know, I keep asking myself the same thing.
It's a frontal shot.
Even if you miss him for the first shot, if he accelerates, you still got him for the second shot. No, the only reason for waiting to get him on Elm is you got him in a triangulated crossfire. Right? You put a team there, down that defense, for a frontal shot, flat, low trajectory. Put a third team down here in this building here on a low floor. Kennedy gets the kill zone there. It's a turkey shoot.
How many men?
Okay. Got one shooter, say one spotter on a radio, maybe 3 teams. I'd say these are professional riflemen too, Chief. They're serious people. Hunters. Patient. Takes skill to kill with a rifle, Chief. You gotta figure that's why there's been no execution of a chief executive with one in 200 years.
Welcome back to the Skiff for our first Saturday special. We may be doing this more often as certain things come up, but today is a special day. It's the anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, right before I was born. But there is a good friend of the show who was alive during that time, Roger Stone. I'm going to bring him in now because he's got a lot to say about this. Roger, thanks for coming on, my friend.
Delighted to be with you on what for me is still a very sad day. It was 62 years ago today. That John F. Kennedy was shot and killed on the streets of Dallas, Texas. And yet today, despite what I think are Herculean efforts by Congresswoman Anna Paulina Luna and the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, we still don't have the complete truth and the complete record of who killed John F. Kennedy and why. In 2013, I wrote a book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. Now, I do not make the case in this book that Lyndon Johnson acted alone. The case I make is that he was the man with the greatest single immediate interest in the death of Kennedy. You see, Lyndon Johnson was under investigation in two of the biggest scandals of the 1960s, the Bobby Baker scandal, in which the Secretary of the U.S. Senate, his right-hand man, Bobby Baker, was taking bribes on behalf of Johnson, and the Billy Sol Estes scandal, which is a scandal in which Billy Sol Estes, a flamboyant Texas Wheeler dealer, had been kicking back to Johnson for enormous multi-million dollar agricultural contracts that Johnson had gotten him from USDA. So Johnson knew that Attorney General Robert Kennedy had already begun telling people LBJ will be dropped from the 1964 ticket and he's going to prison. It was Lyndon Johnson who lured Kennedy to Texas, ostensibly for the purposes of binding up the divisions between the more liberal, progressive left wing of the Democrat Party, headed by U.S. Senator Ralph Yarborough, hated enemy of LBJ, and the other wing, headed by Texas Governor John Connally, later switching to become a Republican, and the Treasury Secretary for Richard Nixon, the man who talked Nixon into abandoning the gold standard, interestingly enough. It's interesting that on the night before the assassination, Johnson went to Kennedy's hotel room and tried to change the seating in the motorcade to put Senator Yarborough in the death car with Kennedy and put his crony, John Connally, who had been Senate, who had been Vice President Johnson's administrative assistant in the U.S. Senate when he was the majority leader, in the car with Johnson. Kennedy refused. I also now am intrigued by this recent documentary by Paramount entitled What the Parkland Doctors Saw. It's a compelling film in which multiple doctors who are still alive and who attended John F. Kennedy on the day of his murder said that they saw wounds in Kennedy consistent with his being shot from the front and the back. Well, that means multiple shooters, and that, of course, means a conspiracy. So to this day, we still don't have all the answers. President Trump's order to the National Archives to release all the information was very good, but it wasn't broad enough because much of the information at the CIA, at the FBI, at U.S. Army Intelligence, at the IRS, and in other branches of government were never turned over to the National Archives. And therefore, Anna Paulina Luna, who's a hero in my belief, has had to go after all those agencies individually to collect more data. So, for example, they finally forced the CIA to hand over the files on a man named George Joannides. Joannides, if you look at the documents, was Lee Harvey Oswald's handler. The CIA denied for decades that they had no previous knowledge of Oswald. But in fact, they were tracking him. They were intercepting all of his correspondence by U.S. mail. And he was, in essence, Oswald's handler. A couple other key points here. We do know, based on the doctors at Parkland, that there were multiple shooters. But the shooter from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building is a man named Malcolm Mack Wallace. How do we know this? Wallace left his fingerprints on the cardboard boxes that formed the so-called crow's nest from which they tell us Oswald shot. We know that they're his fingerprints because Mack Wallace was indicted in 1951 for first-degree murder when he shot and killed a man who was blackmailing U.S. Senator Lyndon Johnson. We also know that at least six witnesses saw a man who met the physical description Malcolm Wallace in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building just before the shooting. Every one of them says a medium build man, balding, wearing glasses. They all each say that he was wearing a tan jacket and light colored slacks. Three of those witnesses were incarcerated in the county jail, which is directly across Dealey Plaza from the Texas School Book Depository building. The other three witnesses saw this from the ground. None of this is in the Warren Commission report. All of it can be found in the records of the Dallas Police Department. Huh. A man named Nathan Darby, who was one of the most respected fingerprint experts in the country, identified the fingerprint found on the cardboard box on the sixth floor as that of Malcolm Mack Wallace. Wallace, at the time of the shooting, was a U.S. Agriculture Department employee in a patronage job arranged for him by Vice President Lyndon Baines Johnson. So wow. I have little doubt that there's multiple shooters, but Malcolm Wallace is the shooter from the sixth floor. There's a little more proof of this. A man named Loy Factor, who's a Native American, came out with a book after the Kennedy assassination in which he said that he had been shooting at a county fair outside of Dallas and he won the shooting prize for his marksmanship. And that Malcolm Wallace approached him afterward and said, "Give me your phone number, son. I may have some work for you." Hmm. Almost a year later, Wallace contacted Factor, who was driven to Dallas and brought to the Texas School Book Depository building, where Factor said he was the backup shooter. In other words, if Wallace lost his nerve or was shaky, that Factor would take the shot. Why should we believe Factor? Here's why. He accurately describes the layout of the room, including saying, "Oh, there was construction going on, and there was a flat saw directly to the right of the window from which the shots were fired." There is no other way for Loy Factor to know that. Now, the other fact we know here is that the FBI wrapped up their investigation into the Kennedy assassination in 7 days flat. They claimed Lee Harvey Oswald acting alone, lone nut, Russian communist sympathizer, three shots all from the back. They handed it off to the Warren Commission and told them just to essentially rubber stamp it. And that's what Arlen Specter, then the chief investigator, I think deputy counsel of the Warren Commission, did. There was one problem. There was a man named Teague, and he was a car dealer, had gone down to Dealey Plaza to see the presidential motorcade, James Teague, pardon me. And while he was watching it, a bullet hit the curb next to where he was standing, and a fleck of cement grazed his cheek, and he began to bleed. This was seen by a deputy from the Dallas County Sheriff's Office, who said, "We need to go in immediately and report this to the Dallas police." They took Teague to the police. He filled out a report. He knew a bullet had hit near his feet on the curb. He expected a follow-up from the FBI, but he heard nothing.
Yeah.
He continued to hear in media, radio, television, newspaper, three shots, only all from the back. But he knew there was a fourth shot. When he returned to the exact spot, the nick in the cement on the curb had already been patched in 24 hours. The only reason we know about this is that Teague had a few drinks, went into a bar and started telling the story to others, and he was overheard by James McLear, later of the Lear-McNair report, and he was then an AP reporter. And the next day, it became a national story. Mysterious fourth bullet found in Kennedy assassination. This is why Arlen Specter had to invent the magic bullet theory, the idea that one bullet hit both Governor John Connally and then hit President John F. Kennedy. completely and totally false.
Wow. So I think there's a lot more to come out on this. What's your future, you know, future telling of what's going to happen with the rest of this information?
Well, the good news, of course, is that there is that Anna Paulina Luna has subpoena power, and she's been backed very effectively by Tulsi Gabbard in their efforts to learn more. I have not seen anything in the material that has been released that contradicts my belief that Lyndon Johnson is the key perpetrator. Now, the JFK researcher community is very divided. There are those who say, no, no, it was the CIA. And then there are others who say, no, it was organized crime. Yet others say that it was financial interests. Remember, Kennedy and his brother were backing a silver-backed dollar, very unpopular with the financial interests. Big Texas Oil also has a role in this. D.H. Byrd, who is a crony of Lyndon Johnson, was the man who owned the Texas School Book Depository building. He was so happy about the murder of Kennedy, he had the window casing removed and put in his living room as a trophy. Jeez. You can't make this stuff up.
Wow.
Now, very recently, an audio surfaced of Cliff Carter talking to Billy Sol Estes, the Johnson protege and associate I discussed earlier, in which Cliff Carter, the executive director of the Democrat National Committee, says on the tape to Billy Sol Estes that Lyndon Johnson hired Mack Wallace to kill John Kennedy. And you can't blame Lyndon because of the way that the Kennedys mistreated him. This audio went public several months ago. I played it on my radio show. I think Alex Jones actually broke it, but it completes the circle here. But once again, what I'm telling you is Lyndon Johnson has the most unique and I think urgent motive, because he knows that on November 23rd, Drew Pearson, who is the most influential syndicated columnist of his day, it has a column accusing Johnson of taking a massive bribe for a General Dynamics defense contract. That's the beginning of the end. After Kennedy's murder, that column, which has already been distributed to the newspapers who carry it, is spiked. Secondarily, however, Lyndon Johnson, as the Senate majority leader, takes the very unusual step of appointing himself to the subcommittee of defense appropriations, where the CIA's black box budgets, their secret budgets, are prepared. He's the paymaster for the CIA. His next door neighbor, Lyndon J. Edgar Hoover, knows that the Kennedys plan to retire him under the mandatory retirement rules, which can only be waived by the president in 1964. Lyndon Johnson's daughters, not terribly attractive, refer to him as Uncle Edgar. I don't believe that the FBI was an active plotter. I think Hoover's position was, you can try this, Lyndon. If it works, I'll cover it up. If it doesn't work, I might come arrest you. So there's
another motive that you touched on, but right after this was the Gulf of Tonkin incident. You mentioned defense contractors. There's a big war push motive for this too, right?
Enormous. Kennedy has very clearly begun to understand that our adventures in Vietnam are not likely to be successful. Mm-hmm. He had visited Vietnam as a college student, and I think he was starting to have his doubts about Vietnam. But a far greater motive was what the CIA believed was his bungling of the Bay of Pigs invasion in Cuba. Now, the Bay of Pigs invasion was first planned under President Eisenhower under a task force that was chaired by Vice President Richard Nixon. But the original plan for the invasion of Cuba had two conditions. One, it was supposed to look like an indigenous Cuban uprising. It was supposed to look like it was done by Cubans, not by the United States. And the men storming the beaches at the Bay of Pigs were supposed to have air cover from 29 Panamanian-flagged bombers flown by Cuban pilots out of Panama. the day before the invasion, the number two man in the CIA, Charles Cable, whose brother Earl Cable just happens to be the mayor of Dallas and a crony of Lyndon Johnson, cancels the air cover. As the men are being cut to ribbons on the beaches, Curtis LeMay, who is a hater of Lyndon Johnson, pardon me, a hater of John Kennedy, goes to him and says, there is only one way to save the day here, and that's to send in the Air Force. And Kennedy refuses because it would blow America's cover. Remember, this is not supposed to look like an American invasion of Cuba.
So I interviewed a survivor of the Bay of Pigs about a year ago in Miami, and said exactly what you said, that the air power never came. So why was that order not provided?
Because I think that the Pentagon was itching for a war with Russia, and I think that this was supposed to be the provocation for it. I would say secondarily, this is kind of a strange twist. As you know, Kennedy's body was taken to Parkland Hospital, but although Texas law requires an autopsy in the state of Texas anytime there's a murder, there was a standoff between the Texas Rangers and the Secret Service, and Kennedy's body was removed at gunpoint from Texas. I don't believe that Kennedy's body is on Air Force One. I believe Kennedy's body is put on Air Force Two, Johnson's plane, and gets to Washington prior to Air Force One. Now, everybody has seen the famous photo of Lyndon Johnson being sworn in on Air Force One. Jackie Kennedy, who's heavily tranquilized at that point, her dress still splattered in blood, standing next to him. First of all, notice the large grin on the face of Lady Bird Johnson. But secondarily, Johnson, in the newsreel footage, winks at one of his segregationist Texas congressional cronies who's standing in the crowd. Here's the point. There was no reason for this ceremony. The Vice President of the United States becomes president immediately upon the certification of the death of the president. Mm-hmm. Lyndon Johnson called Attorney General Bobby Kennedy back in Washington and said, hey, Bobby, look up the oath of office for me because I'm going to take the oath. This was Johnson's way of sticking the knife into Kennedy and twisting it. Wow. He was a sadistic piece of garbage. He was a true sadist. I mean, he was a functioning lunatic. If you read my book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ, which is a New York Times bestseller. By the way, you can just go to themanwhokilledkennedy.com, themanwhokilledkennedy.com, and get your copy. I took this book to six publishers. They all told me it would never be a commercial success. It was a New York Times bestseller within 2 weeks of its publication. You want to avoid the hard, if you go to Amazon, you can get it there as well, but you want to avoid the hard copy version because the paperback edition has three extra chapters. I think comes up next to answer your question is, now I hope we will have a closer examination of the murder of Senator Robert F. Kennedy, because the government's version of that is equally flawed. Sirhan is always in front of Robert Kennedy. He gets off at least eight shots, all of which are accounted for. None of them hit Robert Kennedy. According to Thomas Noguchi, one of the most respected pathologists and the longtime Los Angeles County medical examiner, Robert Kennedy was shot at point blank range with the barrel of the gun right up against his skin in his left rear of his skull. Therefore, he could not have been shot by Sirhan. Eugene Thane, a Filipino who was hired as a security guard only weeks before the assassination and flew back, returned to the Philippines immediately after the assassination, is believed to be the man who actually killed Robert F. Kennedy. The good news is Anna Paulina Luna is on this case. Robert Kennedy Jr., Bobby, a good friend of mine, gave a terrific interview about this with Mike Tyson, of all people, which was up on YouTube for approximately 10 minutes before they took it down. But if you look for it, you can find it.
So I have to ask you, this begs the question. I want to ask this, then I want to ask you about Nixon. But so we just had an assassination, very similar. 3 days later, it ends. No more investigation. The spine of steel, similar to the magical bullet that you talked about. Very similar type situations to cover up. I mean, there's a lot coming out on different outlets about what happened there. Any thoughts?
Yeah, quite a bit. First of all, I saw a piece by Gerald Posner yesterday. Now, for those who don't know, Gerald Posner, who's a friend of mine and a very smart guy, he's written an excellent book on 9/11. But his book on the Kennedy assassination, Case Closed, is a ridiculous joke. He's the last person alive who actually believes Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone, killed John F. Kennedy. He wrote a piece yesterday insisting that Tucker Carlson is essentially irresponsible for continuing to ask questions about Thomas Matthew Crooks, the man who they tell us was the assassination or the attempted assassin of President Donald Trump. They tell us that he had no social media footprint. That turns out to be false. They tell us that he could not that they could not break into his encrypted phone, but he had as many as five phones. The FBI had no trouble getting into my encrypted phone when I was arrested in the Russian collusion hoax. Why are they having problems with Crooks? Why the rush to hose down the roof from which he shot? Unless, of course, you want to make sure there's no DNA.
And cremate the body.
And why cremate the body almost immediately?
Yeah.
Now, as many people know, I got a tip from somebody in Pennsylvania law enforcement that the shooter was not Crooks, but a man named Matthew Yurick. I did a quick search. Matthew Yurick was arrested for violence at a couple of Trump rallies. Now, I am not saying that the killer is Matthew Yurick. I'm asking the question, could the killer be Maxwell Yurick? The tipster who called me, who fears for their job, said in his message, look at the ears. And if you look at the ears of the photos of Thomas Matthew Crooks and the ears of the corpse that's on the top of the building, they do not match. But they do seem to be a match for photos of Maxwell Yurick. And then I asked this question, Todd, where is Maxwell Yurick? Why has he disappeared? No one has seen him. He took down all of his social media and he has literally vanished into thin air. So I'm not making an assertion that he's a killer. I'm asking the question, could he be the killer? I don't accept the idea that this 20-year-old acting alone came this close to killing the future and now president of the United States.
Wow. Well, I guess we'll find out about Charlie Kirk in time because there's a lot coming out there. What about Nixon? What happened to him, in your opinion? You were there.
This is very simple. First of all, the reason that I wrote my book about the Kennedy assassination was because in his post-presidential years, I spent a lot of time. I was working for President Nixon. And one time, as I've told, once he had a couple cocktails, I asked him what really happened in Dallas, who really killed Kennedy. First, he just kind of shivered and said, Dallas. And I said, sure, I'm not really sure what you mean. And he said to me, let me put it this way. Lyndon and I both wanted to be president. The difference was I wasn't willing to kill for it. That's what motivated me to write his book. As he famously said to Pat Buchanan, the Warren Commission is the biggest goddamn hoax in American history. So I think Nixon knew. Nixon was removed for office in the same way, in the same, for the same reasons that Kennedy was removed. In Kennedy's case, they used a bloody coup. In Nixon's case, they used a silent coup. If you look at his memoirs and if you look at the diaries of his chief of staff, H.R. Haldeman, he intended to completely reorganize the national security apparatus to take power away from the CIA, specifically, in his words, to take party power away from unelected bureaucrats who become a government of their own. Former President Harry Truman, who's the president who signed the CIA into law, wrote an op-ed piece for The Washington Post immediately after the murder of Kennedy, in which he said it was the greatest mistake of his presidency, that the agency, which was supposed to have international responsibilities, had gone rogue and was doing illegal things in the United States. That op-ed by a former president of the United States ran for one edition before it was spiked by Ben Bradley, the publisher of the Washington Post, who admits in his biography that he was working for the CIA.
Well, there you go. And the media today. What else, Roger? Anything else you want to get out?
Well, look, I think that this is, as you pointed out, the Charlie Kirk stuff still doesn't add up to me. The point is we should never be satisfied. We should never just believe that the government is telling us the truth, because whether it is the Tonkin Gulf situation, whether it is the truth about the USS Liberty, where Lyndon Johnson approved an Israeli attack on an American ship in which 38 servicemen died and many others were wounded as a pretext for war. They intended to blame that attack on the Egyptians. I've written a new chapter for my book on the Kennedy assassination that involves the role of Israel. I've become persuaded based on new research that Israel had a problem with John Kennedy. He was opposed to their having nuclear weapons. He was insisting that AIPAC register as a foreign agent in the United States. There is a case to be made that Israel does have involvement in Kennedy's assassination. People will have to wait until the new chapter is published, but that will be coming shortly.
So the book is The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ by Roger Stone. You can find it anywhere. Roger, thank you. We'll have you back again down the road. And thanks to the audience for joining us on Saturday.
Great to be with you. It's a very special day. We pray for President Kennedy and his family. This is the beginning, in my view, of the deep state takeover of the United States. I date it to November 22nd, 1963. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you. We'll see you Monday, 10 to noon, Monday through Friday on this GIF Eastern.